Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor, Garrett Wong, who in 1998 played Mark in the feature film Ivory Tower.
Oh, God.
And myself, your favorite helmsman, Robert Duncan McNeil, a.k.a. Robbie McDunk, RDM, Robbie D, whatever you want to call me. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast and lots more bonus material by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers. Well, hello, Mr. Ivory Tower.
Hello. Okay, so what I remember of Ivory Tower.
1998, in the middle of our thing.
It was set in an office. It was like an office sort of a
That's what
setting.
It looked like when I looked it up. Yeah. Something about computers.
Yes, and computers. And other than that, the only thing I remember is that I was working. This is the first time ever that I worked with the actor Keith Coogan. Now, Coogan is the direct descendant of the whole Coogan law, right? The Coogan, the child. I guess there's some Hollywood law where you can't work a kid to death. I think that was based on, you know.
That's funny. I didn't know that. Yeah, there's a thing in Hollywood. What was that actor's name? He was a child actor.
Last name Coogan is what it
Coogan,
was.
So, yeah, but I can't
remember his. Yeah.
I think he was on the Little Rascals or
that's
something.
Right.
He was
that's right.
On something like that.
Yeah.
Jimmy Coogan, maybe, or I can't remember.
Yeah.
It's one but of anyway, those. He made all this money as a kid and his parents spent all the money. So by the time he turned 18,
he had nothing.
He had no money.
No.
And so they passed a law in the state of California that child actors, you have to set up what's called a Coogan account.
Right.
So that a percentage, I think it's like 25% of your paycheck has to be put in that no one can touch except you until you're 18.
Oh, okay. So this has nothing to do with like excessive hours on the set. This has more to do with putting your money in a trust.
Yes.
In a trust that it cannot be taken or, you know, compromised by a parent or other relative.
But it's only a fraction. Like,
I thought it was the whole amount. It's only
it's not
a portion.
Oh. It's a portion. It may not even be a quarter. It might even be 10%. It's a fraction.
Oh, no. Oh, my
goodness. It's really, should be the whole thing.
It should be more, or at least a majority of it, if not the whole thing, for sure. Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah. But anyway, that's funny. So Keith Coogan's in Ivory Tower.
Yeah, and Keith's been in a ton of things. If you guys Google him, you'll recognize his face. So I just remember just, you know, acting with him and talking with him and this and that. So and I did work with him later, like maybe 15 years after the fact. I think I worked with him maybe 4 or 5 years ago, actually, but right before pandemic, we did some random little things. So but yeah, that's all I remember about that movie, Ivory Tower. It was an independent film set in an office scene. It's, you know, a bunch of guys that work in the office, kind of like being guys. That's it.
Right.
So yeah. That's so funny how projects just tend to sort of fade in the memory.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Oh my.
Jackie Coogan was the
actor. Name. Yes. Yes.
Jackie Coogan, who was a child actor in silent films. He was in Charlie Chaplin's The Kid.
Yeah.
He was the kid. He was in the Addams Family TV series.
Mm-hmm.
And as an adult, all of his childhood money. So
gone.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Okay. So Keith is either his grandson. I think it's his grandkid, basically.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
The right era. So
you worked with Hollywood royalty.
I did.
Wow.
Yes. I sure
Very
did.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. Mm. What is this week's episode?
Oh, this week's episode. It is. We have an episode to do. It's repentance.
Repentance. Okay.
All right.
Let's go watch this episode and For all our Patreon patrons, you can stick around for your bonus material.
There you go. Hey, we are back from watching Repentance.
Yes.
My goodness.
I feel like I need to repent from watching that episode.
Well, I'm gonna... Yeah, all right. Okay, but all right, let's just...
Yeah, I gotta repent because okay. shouldn't have done it. I shouldn't have watched it.
Yeah.
I hate myself and I need to repent.
Okay. All right. Let's move on. Let's just do with that what you will, listeners. Do with that what you will with what Robbie just said.
But what we need to do first is some poetry. Because that will make us feel better.
Yes. This is sort of like, you know, we have a format, and if we were a restaurant, our poetry is the appetizer. It's not the main meal, but it's the appetizer. All right. Here's our poetry appetizer synopsis. My haiku / appetizer is Nigerian death row. Ico healed by nanoprobes. Is death the answer?
I just added some little.
I like the sound effect.
Yeah. It's like the audience responding. Each idea. Okay, here we go with a limerick for Repentance.
All right.
Something like this.
Sure.
Voyager finds some prisoners who are far from genteel to help them get back home as part of the deal. Then Doc changes Iko's brain, makes him totally sane. We learn forgiveness is the only way to truly heal.
I like it. That's a good one.
Limericks are limericks have to have a little, you know,
a little
something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Let's talk about these guest stars right now.
Let's do.
Gosh. All right. First of all, Jeff Kober. Oh, as Ico, he did a really, really good job in this episode.
He was great.
Let's face it. Jeff Kober has been known his entire career for playing the heavy. He's always the bad guy in everything he does.
Yeah.
And to be honest, a bad guy, usually a bad guy that doesn't have, and not his fault, but with the writing that he's been in, not a ton of layers. But in this one, my goodness, he's got to start off here. He's got to go here. He's got to go there. It's just, I thought this was a great role for a guest star and, good job.
I agree.
I have to apologize to Jeff Kober because I didn't even realize that he was in this episode or in any of our episodes. And I was at a convention with him, Robbie, where he was talking to me. And I was like, he's kind of talking to me like he knows me, but I don't know him at all. But now I know why.
The other thing is, I feel like on our show, we had a lot of actors who had been on China Beach.
Yes.
And Jeff Kober had been on China Beach.
With Bob Picardo.
Like Bob Picardo must have told the casting directors, take a look at all my friends from China Beach.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I'm sure that Jeff and Bob had a great reunion.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Working together again.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of scenes together. So
yeah, they did. So his very first credit happened in 1985. Mm-hmm. That's the year that I graduated high school, 1985. We've got Spirit. We've got Jive. We're the class of 85. That's the only thing we could find to rhyme with five was Jive. Or we're alive, you know, whatever. So it's just not much to rhyme with five. So there you go.
It was, class of 85 was a little, they were different.
So the sci-fi TV series V, he did the original V.
Ooh, the original V.
Wow. Yes, he also did appear on an episode of Enterprise. So he's done more than one Star Trek show. Yeah, that's good. Nice. Tim DeZarn, nice Dutch last name, it looks like, who played Yedek. Mm-hmm. Very, very long list of guest star credentials. His very first credit was a year after Jeff's in 1986 on an episode of The Equalizer. So the TV series The Equalizer. You remember that show, right?
I do. And that was a New York-based show. When I lived in New York, that was the only TV show in town, pretty much. So...
Did everyone try to get a guest star on that one?
Everybody wanted to be on The Equalizer. I was on a daytime soap opera at the time, so I couldn't.
You were, right?
But I couldn't even audition. I was
if you were available, you would have wanted to be on The Equalizer as well. Okay, Well, everybody. Tim Dzarn did it. He was on The Equalizer in '86, and he's also been in an episode of Deep Space Nine as well. So,
oh, nice.
There you go.
Great.
All right, okay. F.J. Rio, who played Jolig. His very first credit is in 1994 on an episode of Seinfeld as a street tough guy, Yeah. But he did do 14 episodes of the show The Shield, if you remember that cop show.
Sure.
He had a really
that was a groundbreaking show. Yeah, definitely.
Very, very. It was pushing the envelope. It was
absolutely.
He's also been in DS9 as well in three episodes, a three episode arc as Muniz. It was the character in DS9, and he was on Enterprise as an engineer. So there you go.
Wow, lots of Trek.
Yeah, lots. Last person, Greg Poland, Voyager security officer. He was the one that sort of came in and said, like, put your weapons down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Greg's really a dancer more than an actor. Yeah. Well, so he played a dancer in.
Greg in an earlier episode and he had a line? I remember giving this credit. Yes.
Oh, well,
I think so. He may have had a, like a one line thing, which would totally make sense that they brought back somebody who had done just who had been established. So we didn't see somebody popping in.
Yeah, well, his first credit was as a dancer in the film Malcolm X in 1992. So he was a Roseland dancer. But he was also in Star Trek Insurrection as an Eleran officer number two. Uh-huh. But his credits sort of stopped in 2009. So I'm not sure exactly what he went on to do after that. But dancer primarily, actor second, Greg Poland. And that's it.
Great. Yeah, there you go.
That's what we have. Story is by Mike Sussman and Robert Doherty. We forgot to do the guests. And usually I guess Robert Doherty. So this would have been, you know how they say a broken clock is right two times a day. So I would have had that with Robert Doherty. So story by Mike Sussman and Robert Doherty. Teleplay by Robert Doherty, who is one of my more favored writers on this show. And directed by our friend Mike Vahar.
Love Mike Vahar.
He did a great job in this episode.
He did a great job.
Lots of fun stuff here. Okay.
Agreed.
Shall we jump into it? We're on the bridge. We are responding to a distress call. There is a ruptured conduit, which is flooding a ship with plasma radiation. We don't know who's on this ship, but they're requesting immediate transport.
We're on the bridge. We see this. Janeway's in the middle of a conversation.
Yeah.
We cut to the view screen. And I got to say, the ship looked like the plasma leak or whatever. I was not a big fan of it. I was like,
really?
Oh, it looks a little cheesy.
That was you barely see it though. It's really quick.
I think once or twice, but I was just a couple times and I was like,
you're not a fan of it. Okay.
No, it wasn't. Great.
I liked the ship though. I thought the ship looked cool. The actual ship itself, I liked.
Well, I said later that I felt like the ship had some Delta Flyer kind of elements to it. It felt like it had a little influence of, up on the front part of the Delta Flyer, a little bit. Yeah. Somebody's been stealing my designs. I just want to say I don't like it. Okay.
I'm going to say this. Yes. For every major invention that's ever happened in the world, one person will think it sends it out into the universe, and multiple people will come up with that invention almost at the same time, like the light bulb was. So
maybe we're
that's
just
what
on the
happen.
Same wavelength. Yeah, Nigerians.
Yeah, you're calling them Nigerians. They're not Nigerians. They're Nigerians.
No,
yes.
Nigerians.
But the minute you thought about the design of Delta Flyer, it threw it into the universe, especially in the Delta Quadrant, and the Nigerians picked up on it and they designed ship.
That's it.
Okay.
Anyway, we see the ship. I don't love the plasma leaks, but whatever. It's quick. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
Harry detects 11 life signs on this ship.
Yes.
And he says
some are injured.
Mm-hmm. Two of them are weak. Some are injured. So I didn't also like on the bridge. We dove right into like some, you know, Jeopardy and action.
Oh,
and Mike Vahar was whip panning. It was handheld. It was kind of whip panning around. I thought, what a great idea. Just diving right into action.
Mm.
So
it's fast. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Janeway orders the injured to be transported to sick bay while the rest of those that are not injured will be transported to Cargo Bay 1, and security teams are being sent to both locations. Tuvok sort of heads off to deal with that. Yeah. We're in Cargo Bay 1, and we see this beam in of prisoners and evidently some jail guards, I guess. We don't know who they are yet. And Tuvok arrives just in time. And you see one of the jailers kind of saying, "Where's our weapons?" And Tuvok's like, "Well, you'll get them later. You know, we're not going to beam you in with your weapons."
I did get a little confused.
Did you?
So there were, you said 11 life signs. Let me do the math. I'm sure it makes sense. But you said 11 life signs, two are injured.
Right.
So that means, and then he comes in and he said, "We had eight prisoners. We had prisoners, eight prisoners in custody." So that means there were only three jailers for eight. Does that track? I think it does, actually. I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that does track. So, but anyway.
Right, because if you remember when Yedek sends in the other guards to beat down Iko, there were two of them, right?
That's true.
So that's the three guards, right?
Eight prisoners, two of them are injured.
Two of them injured. Six are in cargo bay. It does add up. It didn't add up in that other episode when all the holodeck characters beam down to the planet, and there's supposed to be tons of them, and there really wasn't that many. So
they say, "Hey, where's the rest of our prisoners? We had eight prisoners. They're not here. We cut into sick bay." And seven, obviously the two that we beamed into directly to sick bay, seven is being held at the throat with a knife.
I didn't start there though. I mean, Vahar starts with his camera on the ground, pointed to the ground on the unconscious. Oh, nice. But there's an unconscious, because there's one unconscious prisoner and one conscious prisoner, which is Iko. Yeah. And I thought that was Pablo on the ground, but it's not Pablo.
No, it's not Pablo.
It's our guest star. But yeah, this prisoner is very agitated, holding seven hostage.
Yes.
I want to say at knife point, but it really wasn't at knife point. At device point.
It felt like a knife or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
The doctor's trying to calm him down. He says, "You know, I'm sure we can resolve this without resorting to violence. What is it you want?" He asks for a ship. And some food.
Yeah. That ends that scene because we go into credits. Okay. So now we've got this like, oh my gosh, they're at knife point and there's danger to one of our heroes. So after credits, we jump back into sick bay and we find out that Warden Yedek of the Nigerian Detention Force has arrived.
Yes. Basically, Yedek says he's not going to negotiate.
Negotiations with prisoners. You're not leaving this ship. You're not leaving this ship.
Yeah. Nope.
And Seven then, does get the jump on him with his quick little elbow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the prisoner then grabs the doctor, who then rolls his eyes. That's one of the biggest eye rolls I've seen from the doctor.
I loved it. It was so funny.
It went way back there.
I'm a hologram. I cannot be harmed.
And Tuvok shoots through the doctor to disable the prisoner, the agitated prisoner.
Yes.
We learn is Iko later on.
Yeah.
We are in the captain's ready room where we have Yedek thanking Janeway for coming at the right moment to save them because they all would have been doomed. And then the question is, well, why didn't you use the escape pods? And he said, well, because I don't want any of these prisoners to escape. They're dangerous. We're all headed for the home world because they're going to be executed when we get there. And that's a bit of a shocker.
As soon as he says that, did you see Tuvok looks over the captain? There's like a...
Oh, yeah.
Long silence between the captain and Tuvok. That was awesome.
Even Chakotay is a little bit like,
yes, and Chakotay too. Yeah.
Evidently that homeworld is about 13 light years away in the wrong direction. But Yedek says, look, I can contact my people. They can send a transport over here and meet us. So that is the plan. Yedek does walk out of there, but there is a bit of a conversation with Chakotay and Janeway talking about, how do you feel about this? And I love Janeway's comment. Well, I've got to adhere to the prime directive. And all I could think about was you talking about how many times she has ignored the prime directive. Yeah. So
then we go to sick bay and 7 of 9 is fine. The doctor has a minor glitch though, but he's in his program from the Tuvok shooting him, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to, you know, tune him up. And then Janeway comes in.
He makes a Billy the Kid reference in this scene too, because he says in the very top, he tells Seven, you know, I could have handled it, but then you and, you know, he's talking
Tuvok the Kid
had to like do your thing and da 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 da. So that was a funny little reference.
That's funny.
Yeah. Janeway shows up.
Janeway does show up. She comes to check on how they're doing.
Yeah.
And then Iko jumps in and starts threatening her.
Yeah, but he says that after he does the thing.
Does the hand.
Is that the show that he can take the pain? Okay, yes. That's what it is. Okay, all right. That's like one of us grabbing a electric fence, right? And saying, look, I can do this. And so that's what it was. Yeah,
because he literally does it. He says, let me out. Janeway says, no, I'm afraid I can't do that.
Right.
And then he pushes his hands up against the force field to show he can take the pain.
And threatens to kill everyone.
Then he says, if you don't, I'll kill you all.
Oh.
He's a scary bad guy.
He's a bad guy. Mofo is what he is. So can I say mofo? I mean, it's not the whole thing.
I think you can.
Okay. Yeah. I just did.
Yeah, you did.
Okay. Because if I said bad FOMO, that's fear of missing out. I don't want to say that. So that doesn't work.
So Janeway says, beam these prisoners to their new accommodations in Cargo Bay.
Yeah.
And then we go back into Cargo Bay One.
Yeah.
And they've got this enhanced brig. I don't know what else to call it. They've built.
Okay. Who built this? How do they have the time to build this?
How do we have the resources? We're trying to save on resources.
Can we replicate a brig? Does our replicator replicate something that large? Maybe portions of it, maybe parts of it, and we can put it together like Lego. But it's still shocking that looked like a really nice detention center. It was like, look how modern and beautiful it is. And it was made within 5 minutes, clearly.
Well, and Tuvok describes him. He says, these force fields are impenetrable.
Yes.
As are the titanium bulkheads. Titanium bulkheads?
Where do we get the titanium from?
I don't know.
I
don't know.
It's confusing. It looked nice, but confusing.
Yes. Tuvok says there's guards with their weapons there.
Yeah.
He says that you'll only be able to carry these weapons to guard your prisoners in Cargo Bay. You got to stay in Cargo Bay.
Right.
And just around then, Neelix arrives with some food. He's got Talaxian spice stew served over Leola rice pilaf. But Yedek's like, nope. These men do not deserve such a good meal.
Yeah.
And Neelix says, well, Federation protocols for the treatment of prisoners requires that we feed them. So I think Yedek picks up the spoons. He's not going to let them use the spoons because I guess that could be dangerous for prisoners.
I'd understand fork or knife, but spoon. I don't know anyone who's been spooned to death. Have you heard anyone been spooned to death? I don't think so. No. I don't know. So that kind of
depends on if you're like cuddling spoon. I guess if you're cuddling spoon, you could squeeze.
You've already told me you don't like people right up on your back. So I'm assuming you don't like to be spooned either. So you might be spooned.
I like to spoon, but not be spooned.
Right. So you like to play big spoon, not little spoon.
Yes. I got
to
play when you're big cuddling. Spoon. Okay. Yes. Agreed.
All right. But clearly they're not talking about cuddling in this scene at all.
No, they're not.
The other thing is, Robbie, have you ever seen a force field open up like that? I mean,
the hole in the force field. Yeah.
Has that
never?
I know. Because that was duplicating in a current day jail cell. They like slide that thing open.
The little window.
Yes. So they do a little, and it was exactly at the height of the actual window. And it just opened up just enough for the food, which I thought was really unique because I've never seen that before till now. Yeah. So
yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Jolik does thank Neelix for standing up and having his back, which at first I went along for the ride with Neelix on this. I was totally conned by Jolik, who later on is going to turn out to be a con man.
Yeah.
But he was very sincere, very well played.
I'm going to call him Jolik Suave from now on.
Exactly.
And instead of Rico Suave, Jolik Suave is his name.
Smooth.
Oh my gosh.
We go to sick bay next. Seven of Nine, while they're still repairing the doctor's program, they basically have a scene in sick bay where they debate, the ethics of
capital punishment,
of execution. It's basically just a debate scene.
And that debate has happened in this country over and over and over again, because every state has a different rule here in this United States of America. Some believe in it, some don't.
Yeah. The one thing dramatically, story-wise, that came out of this scene, it was mostly an intellectual debate, but Seven does say, you know, to the doctor, look, I'm just trying to be objective. You told me to always look at both sides of an argument.
Right.
So
that's
you
right.
do see that Seven is trying to understand, to not take a position, but to be open to learning something, which she eventually does. You know, she really connects to this argument personally.
Right.
But at this point, she's just laying it out there that she's trying to see both sides.
Yeah.
And now we go to the brig.
Cargo Bay One.
Cargo Bay One.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Enhanced brig.
Yes.
Handheld again. Good job, Mike Vahar, giving it that sort of prison-y vibe. Joleg is giving Iko crap about how he can't steal his food now. He's like teasing him.
I know. He was talking about how you can't steal that other dude's food, the guy in the cell next to him.
That's right. Yeah. You can't steal his food.
Right.
Like, and you normally Iko, do. The most evil of them all at this point, throws his bowl at that force field.
Yeah.
And when he throws his bowl, the guards show up, and Jolik explains, well, he doesn't think he got enough to eat. Yedek sort of threatens Iko and says, you know, if you cause another disturbance,
you'll get zero food for the rest of the time that you're here. Yeah. I'm going to withhold all the food. And that's when Iko decides to mention two names. And those names just happen to be Yedek's children. And so Yedek's like, wait, how do you know that? And then, of course, Iko, in his evilness, says, do you know that they're safe? How do you know that they're safe? Yes. And that basically gives Mr. Yedek the chance to send his goons in to give a little bit of a roughing up. And boy, they beat the bejesus out of him up hard.
Iko. Yeah. Starfleet security runs in and puts a stop to it. But when you look down at Iko on the floor, he's bleeding red from all over his head.
Mm-hmm.
They really kicked him in the head or whatever they did.
Well, they used the butt of the phaser rifle.
Just kind of pistol whipped him or something. But this is also the scene where Iko he grabs the grate above his cell.
And he's doing pull-ups like that?
Pulls up with his fingers, and he's just holding himself there.
Yeah.
Which is, again, I guess to show he doesn't feel pain, or maybe he likes the pain.
Right.
That would not be easy to do.
Now, when you saw that happening, didn't you see a little bit of flexion happening in the actual grating where it was?
Yes.
This is not titanium, whatever the heck, I mean, which should be completely immovable, right? So this is another little bit of a slip here, a little bit of a hole. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, he looks bad. Not good. Captain's ready room. Janeway is basically dressing down Yedek, and he says
PO'd.
Yeah, how dare you?
How dare
unarmed
you?
Unarmed man,
defenseless man.
Yeah,
no matter what he's done,
that's
brutal, and torture is not okay with us. And,
So now Tuvok's in charge.
basically, Yedek says, "Well, violence is all he knows. He's spent his entire life hurting people,
and
then that guy."
But Janeway does forbid him. He's like, "You and your men are not even allowed to enter Cargo Bay One from this point forward. Tuvok is now in charge." And Yedek's like, "No. He doesn't have the skills to do this work of a guard." And
Janeway gets really defensive.
Yeah, she's like, "Yeah, he does. Yeah, he can do it."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tuvok has been a Starfleet security officer for a very long time. Believe me, he's qualified.
Yeah,
she was like, mad.
She was very
gritted teeth. She was really standing up for Tuvok.
She became a pirate at that point.
Yes, she did.
Yeah, she stood up for Tuvok, her man. Remember, she held hands with him in that one episode saying, "This is my man. I already have one." So she's going to stick up for him. Yeah, so now we're in sick bay, and we learned that the doctor needs Seven's help. He needs Seven's nanoprobes to help bypass the edema in his parietal lobe. Like, he's been beaten so bad that there's damage to his brain.
Yep.
And the only way to help you know, heal this is to utilize Borg nanoprobes, which she agrees to.
But at first she's like, well, what's the point? Like, if he's already be executed, why
would you do this?
Why would you even do that?
Yeah.
And he says, what happens later is irrelevant,
right,
that he is not about to let him die.
Right. As long as he's on this ship, he's not going to die. As long as he's under the care of the doctor is going to keep this person alive. Yes.
But by the way, this is the scene where I realized, you know, the doctor is bald. Let's just, you know, say what it is. And I realized Yedick is also bald.
Also bald. Okay.
Why didn't they should have connected in this episode? Like, hey, you're bald too. Maybe, you know, there could have been a bridge to some relationship with the bald guys. I didn't know that aliens had, you know, genetic baldness in their species, but I guess they do. Anyway, just a little sidebar.
I'm sorry, just the way you frame that. You're like, hey, you're bald too. And that's it. They have this whole conversation, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. There should have been this common, you know, this one thing that brings them together that they realize, hey, we have this in common.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But they didn't even use that.
They didn't even talk about it.
No, no.
So we go back to the Cargo Bay One, or the Enhanced Brig, as I like to call it.
The Enhanced Brig.
I noticed here a beautiful crane shot over the top of those cages.
Yes.
And I just made a note also that I had noticed in this Cargo Bay One, all these scenes, they had those kind of moves. So they must have shot all these scenes on the same day and had this crane, because cranes were expensive. We didn't use cranes unless it was a special deal. So if they had rented the crane, or, you know, set to use the crane,
how much is the crane, honestly? Like, give me a ballpark. What would it cost to rent the crane?
I don't know, because you've got a crane, you've got the operators, depending on if it was a remote head and the equipment. I mean, it could be, you know, $5,000-$10,000 maybe,
just for the day. Right, that's it.
Between all the little costs of it, it could be significant.
Okay,
so yeah, if they had a crane for that day, we didn't carry a crane, you know, as a regular tool. You couldn't just pull it out if you decided to use a crane. You had to plan for it.
That's
so,
right.
So yeah, lots of shots. I love the opening shot in this brig scene. And I also liked the fact that it was dark in there. Like, I feel like our show looks really good in these dark sets.
Mm-hmm.
Marvin did a great job of lighting this Enhanced Brig.
Mm-hmm.
The lights built into the corners of the set were kind of cool. I just thought the set looked really cool.
Yeah, it did look cool. And I just came to one realization. Why did they even have tritanium on top? Why didn't they just make the force field go all the way on top?
They could have just
and over.
Yeah. Mm. Why didn't they just make force fields and not build cages? And but the cages look cool. The cages,
that's
cool.
True. We needed it to look cool. And also we needed Iko to grab with his fingers and go
and do his pull-ups.
So you can't grab a force field with your fingers and pull up. So okay,
anyway, we're back in the Enhanced Brig. Cool shots, as we discussed, to open the scene. We see Neelix coming in to serve the prisoners another meal. Jolig sort of starts a conversation with Neelix, and he basically says, well, guess why I'm here. And Neelix says, well, I think you must have killed someone.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, I'll tell you why. It's because I am Benkaran.
Mm-hmm.
And the Benkaran, they believe that we're all criminals. And when he was found at the scene of a murder, he was arrested, he says, but they didn't believe his claim of innocence. And just because he's Benkaran, he says, it doesn't matter if he was innocent, because they believe they're all criminals. So he's really getting sympathy from Neelix.
He is. But what does that remind you of, this whole setup, this whole conversation?
I don't know.
Like, what are the parallels with our society?
Profiling, because, I guess.
Well, because later when Neelix does more research, he finds out that Benkarans only make up 10% of the Nigerian population or territory, but yet they make up 80% of the prisons, which is almost identical to the numbers it's almost identical to the numbers of African Americans that are incarcerated. They only make up 13% of the population, but yet they make up a majority of the prison population.
Right.
So that's the way, I mean, that the parallel that I saw. I thought, yeah, oh, wow.
It's the bias and the racism of Ben Karn. Karns are just assumed to be bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets the sympathy of Neelix, and you see at the end of the scene a very long close-up. I don't know if you remember, but...
On Neelix's face?
Yeah, it held on Neelix. He sort of turned and thought, looked at the other prisoners, and then back. And you could see that he was getting sympathy.
He was getting sucked in. He was getting sucked in.
Yeah.
At that point. And I was too. And you were too as well.
Yeah,
right. Totally. So we all got sucked in on this one.
We go to sick bay next. Iko wakes up. He's surprised to hear that it was Seven's nanoprobes that saved him.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of dizzy though. He tries to sit up. He's got a headache or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then the doctor goes to get some, you know, another injection or something. And Iko says, "You're not afraid of me." And Seven says, "There's no reason to fear someone in your condition."
Yeah.
But Iko says, "No, you were never afraid of me, not even when I tried to kill you."
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "It's nice to look in someone's eyes and
not see fear." It's nice to look into someone's eyes and not see fear, which is a really profound statement right there. Big time.
Very profound. And also clearly a huge change. Like suddenly, whatever this treatment is,
it's something is happening.
Something
here.
Is happening and clearly. He is changing.
Because I feel like before that treatment, his statement would have been, "One of the things I love the most is looking into people's eyes and seeing fear." I think it was the opposite of that statement beforehand.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Mess hall time.
Mess hall time.
Finally, here we go.
I have a scene.
Here we go.
So Neelix is hanging out in the back of the mess hall.
Yeah. He's doing research right there. Well, he's in his kitchen. He's in his
kitchen behind this glass wall.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you hear... from behind that glass wall, Paris says, "Do you have to be a criminal to get something to eat around here?" I loved it. It was so funny. But Neelix is just reading his pad. He says, "Sorry, dinner will be ready in 15 minutes.
And then you guys just open up that thing like it's curtains to a stage.
Paris and Taurus slide the windows open.
Yeah.
And B'Elanna says, "Well, you said that 15 minutes ago. Clearly they're hungry."
Yeah,
they are very hungry. But Neelix is just caught up in doing this research. He's reading about the Nigerian criminal justice system. And he goes on to explain to Torres, to B'Elanna and Tom.
What I just said earlier, 10%, right? And 80% are in the prisons. And he thinks Jolig might be innocent. That is basically what the message of the scene is.
And Paris sort of calls it. He's like, "Neelix, you know, you've got the softest touch in the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah.
You know, be careful getting sucked into this."
Yep.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And Paris even says, like, when he was in at the Federation Penal Colony, that everybody had a story, everybody had a con.
Mm-hmm.
But Neelix does point out that the stakes here are higher because no one there was sentenced to die. So
that's right.
I like this scene though. I thought it was fun. I thought I had some light comedy in it. Tom did, and it was just fun to have that threesome and the food thing. I don't know.
With the whole thing being closed and then it opened up?
Well, I'm not really okay with that.
I'm not okay with it
because we've never seen it before. I feel like it was literally put in for this.
Well, I'm okay with it opening, but I thought it should have opened when you first say something like, "Hey, can we get some food in here?" Not like, you know, you say, your first line was like, "Is it only prisoners that get food?" or whatever you say, right? Like, I thought maybe that's when you should open it in the beginning instead of just staying.
It wouldn't have been as funny.
Yeah, I suppose.
It was funnier to have it shut and talking through the wall. I don't know.
All right.
I like the scene. It was nice.
Yeah.
It was a fun, light distraction from a pretty heavy episode.
Yeah.
There wasn't much lightness or comedy in this episode.
It's very true. We have an exterior spaceship shot, sort of break it up a little
Finally,
bit.
Finally, I made a note. I think that may be our first flyby.
Yeah.
In the episode.
It is.
Usually we have a lot more. So this was finally we got a flyby.
It took a little while. And then we move over to sick bay.
Yes.
Where I got to say, Iko really is just completely just bit by bit. You're like, wow, this is not the same person at all.
No, and he's a whole new person.
Yeah. And he's just confused about how the doctor didn't get hurt earlier. And the doctor explains, well, I'm a hologram. I'm photonic. And he's like, well, I'm not sure I understand that. He says, I'm made of light. And that's when he goes, well, I wish I was made of light, because he doesn't want to feel the pain that he's starting to feel about all the bad things he's done to all the people. This is the beginnings of him sort of feeling like, oh my gosh, something's going on with me.
Yes.
Right. And the doctor wants to give Iko another round of nanoprobes to help out with his healing. And while he's talking to Seven about this, Iko kind of yells out in pain. The doctor comes back and he says that his stomach and it's excruciating pain. He's feeling like he's going to throw up. It's not good. And it's really the guilt.
The doctor scans him and says, I'm not detecting anything.
Yeah, right.
What is it? What's wrong? And he says, well, I can't stop thinking about
the guy that I killed. Yes. Yes.
He said, basically admits he's never felt this feeling before. He's never felt guilt before.
No. And then he pivots a little bit. He says, well, maybe you're doing this to me on purpose. This is my punishment, because he thinks this is some type of advanced technological punishment where you feel. And, you know, the doctor is a little bit confused. But he says to the doctor, I want you to remove these nanoprobes. I don't want to feel this anymore. This is killing me, literally.
I'd rather die than feel these feelings. He's really struggling with this transformation and dealing with his feelings.
Yeah. Huge transformation.
We go to the medical lab after this. He's looking at some scans and he tells Seven, the doctor does, Seven that there's some new neural pathways through his cortex.
Yeah, the neurotransmitters have established new pathways throughout his cortex. That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the doctor admits, he says he can't be sure if it's abnormal without accessing information about their biology from the Nigerian government.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it ends. You know, Seven says, well, you need to talk to Yedek and contact a Nigerian medical officer, and maybe they can give you some of that biological information. So.
Right.
We see that, you know, the doctor thinks maybe something is happening.
But we do have a continuation of this scene in that Iko does ask Seven to sort of hang out and stay. She's about to walk out of sick bay. And he says, please stay and talk with me. I'm scared. And again, these are words that probably have never come out of Iko's mouth, saying he's scared. That does give her pause. She does walk over and she said, well, what do you want to talk about? And he's really. He's verklempt. He can't come up with anything. He's like, and then she says, well, I'm doing astrometrics. And then he says, well, what is that? So then she talks about what astrometrics is and
stars, and then, study of stars. And he goes, when I was a kid, I used to lie under the stars for hours and stare until I could see the shapes.
Yeah.
Seven's like, wait, shapes?
Shapes. He goes,
faces and animals made out of stars. And she's constellations.
Yes. Yes. And he names a few constants. Oh, he says that he named them himself.
Yes.
He named one of them Pytos, the warrior, and Gezed, the beast. The warrior is chasing after the beast, but can never, ever, ever catch up because they're always the same distance. It's getting
poetic in this scene.
He really is.
You're like, wait a minute. You were just a killer, and now you're becoming a poet. And
that's all you need.
I also noticed in the scene, the close-ups were tighter than normal for our show. And I think it was absolutely appropriate, but some beautiful close-ups on everybody.
There was also, in the close-ups, I'm sure you saw this, but some of the close-ups, there was almost like golden light filter on people. Yeah. Like, it just like, wow, it looked like a beauty filter of some sort as well. But you're right. It's just a nanoprobe a day will keep the murderous thoughts away, clearly. Yep. Onella is another one that he named, a constellation which had all the daughters, other 16 stars around it that were called, that he named the daughters. But now we're finally empathizing, or we're feeling For this character,
we're feeling the soul of this person, and
mm-hmm. now we are invested in this character. We start to care for this character, and we have another exterior ship shot at this point. The second one, finally, we're
back into our groove.
Yeah. And funny enough, I also named that last location mess hall as well, even though it was sick bay. So I feel like my neurotransmitters are not firing correctly either.
You must have been hungry.
I need food or nanoprobes, one of the two. Yes. Yeah. We're in cargo bay one now.
Or the enhanced brig.
Or the EB. I'm going to even go even shorter. Enhanced brig, shortened is EB. So we're back in the EB, and Neelix is playing Catiscot with Jolig. Jolik seems like, you know, he's taken, he's gotten the hang of it. He wins that game. And we learn a little bit more about what happened to Jolik. We also learn a little bit more about how the Nigerian penal system works. Mm-hmm. And after the accused is convicted, it is the family of the victim that decides the sentencing, mm-hmm. which, if you think about that, oh my gosh, if that
it's
was
all about revenge. An eye for an eye, like it's revenge.
It really is.
Revenge,
it really is.
Justice.
Right. And, you know, Neelix talks about, well, you know, in my research, there are certain people that committed murder that did not get the death penalty. And that's when we learn that if you have enough financial resources, if you happen to be a very rich Nigerian, you can negotiate with the victim's family by saying, look, let me make reparations for the death, for the murder of your loved one, and I will just stay in prison for life and I won't be executed, basically. So, you know, the privileged are the ones who are able to escape the death penalty.
But again, I didn't realize this con going on, but Neelix offers to ask the captain for help to pay
reparations.
The victims.
Mm-hmm. That's
and,
right.
And Jolik says, I don't want to admit guilt.
Yeah.
You know, he says, I don't want to admit guilt. I don't want to pay the victims and admit guilt. But he says, the one thing you could do for me is I'd love to write a letter to my brother.
Yeah. If you can get that letter to my bro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Neelix is like, of course.
I can do that. Yeah. We also learned the ancient Nigerian language phrase, vecto valek kavadam, which means favor the victims. We learned that in this scene. So that's the sentencing part of it, of course.
Yeah, Neelix goes to get a pad and help him write a letter to his brother. And we go back to sick bay. And I wrote down amazing opening shot in the sick bay. We'd never done this in 7 years before. It was behind the surgical bed, coming out of like the roof, the blackness of the set.
Oh.
And dropping down. It was amazing. It was a great angle. We've pulled those walls back there before to put the camera, but we've never actually kind of made a move through the structure of the ship in that way. I thought it was really cool. So
yeah,
bravo, Mike Vahar. Good shot.
Yeah.
But we come down in sick bay, Seven's entering, Aiko's there. She brought data on star formations for him. On a pad de deux.
Yes.
And he looks at it and he's like, well, these are just numbers. He says, I want to see the star. So again, the poet in him.
Yeah.
And she says, well, when she comes back, she'll bring some star charts or something, you know, for him to look at.
Right. The next time she comes back.
Mm-hmm. Next time. And then he asks about her implant, her ocular implant. And she says, well, the Borg had installed it. And he says at that point, he says, wow, that must have hurt.
Yeah.
And Seven says, I don't recall.
Yeah, I don't recall.
And Aiko responds, well, I hurt people. I deserve to die.
Yeah.
And I feel like that really lands on Seven, the ocular implant, the pain that she felt.
Mm-hmm. The pain that she inflicted on all the people that she assimilated. And had to put that in play. Yeah, definitely landed on her. But we don't know that until later.
Happens later where she puts it all together. But it's definitely she's starting to relate to this murderer.
Yeah, she feels, she's starting to feel the same things that he had to go through. And now the doctor sort of interrupts this by calling Seven over to show her some scans of a normal Nigerian brain and an ICO's brain scan before and after the nanoprobes. And he talks about a certain node there that's not connected in his old brain, which means that was really important because the disconnection is basically a disconnection of his conscience. There is no moral compass. He doesn't care, right?
Well, he calls it a birth defect. He said,
right.
He
was born like that.
Born like this. Mm-hmm. It's like a birth defect that he had. And
right. But the nanoprobes completely fixed it.
Seven's nanoprobes to treat her injuries from the assault. It seemed that they inadvertently repaired the defects as well.
Yeah.
And Janeway's there and, Janeway says, well, you activated his conscience.
Yeah.
That would explain why he's suddenly experiencing guilt. So
I also want to give a shout out to both makeup and hair for Iko in this episode, because every scene after the nanoprobes, they make him look better and better. He's less threatening. I mean, all of a sudden it's like, hey, this is a guy you'd like to marry your sister to, you know, it's like, what?
Warmer. Oh my gosh.
His hair is coiffed better. Is like, his face doesn't look as menacing. I don't know what they did, but
a little more.
So good job for hair and makeup on this.
Yeah. So we leave the medical lab and go to the briefing room and they're explaining this to Yedek. Mm-hmm. And Yedek does not buy it. Just does not buy it.
And the doctor says, look, Iko is a victim of his own biology. And Yedek's like, oh, really? Oh, he's the victim? I don't think so, buddy. Yeah. This guy's he's a menace to society. He's a monster. There's no way. Yeah.
And Janeway argues for, he's fundamentally changed and killing him is not going to accomplish anything.
Right.
But Yedek says, well, that's not your decision to make.
Right.
And then Seven chimes in. Well, nor is it yours, Mr. Yedek.
Is it Seven or Janeway who asked about the other process to get the appeal going? Seven brings it up.
Well, Janeway is the one that says, listen, we could debate this all day, but the fact is our personal opinions are irrelevant. All that matters is Nigerian law. So she brings up, let's look into the law and see if this changes anything. And Tuvok says, maybe there's a means of appeal at his disposal.
Yeah.
And Yedek
very reluctantly says, yes, there is. He concedes, not happily, but he does concede. Janeway does ask Yedek to help Tuvok draft the appeal.
Yeah. So then we go to sick bay from here and another cool shot I've never seen before. Super low angle. Iko's leaning on the bio bed, the surgical bed there. And it's down on the floor looking straight up. It was just a cool, cool angle.
Yeah. And I like how I like the angle, but I also like how this scene is an immediate response to Janeway saying, help Tuvok draft an appeal, because immediately you see that awesome shot and Iko says, like, I don't want the appeal.
Take it back.
Forget it. Don't submit it. Nope.
Yep.
I deserve to die.
And Seven says, you'd rather die because you think it'll relieve your pain. And Iko says, death is what I deserve.
Right.
So he's really feeling guilty and wants to make amends. He wants to make reparation, make things right.
Definitely.
I also noted here, I finally noticed his prison jumpsuit has lights on. Did you notice all these little like Legos?
It took you until, you know what it reminded me of? Do you remember that little kids game when we were younger that we used to play? Light Bright. It looked like Light Bright thingies on his uniform. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was sort of in a weird pattern. I don't get the purpose of it, but
no idea.
He's got lights on his jumpsuit. So.
Yeah. And as far as I know, I mean, we have had a few light things like that suit that you wore on Alice that had some light stuff going on.
That was
right.
Kind of a space suit, though. Maybe this is like a tracking suit for prisoners that
maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
OK.
But this is the scene where Seven, when Iko says death is what I deserve, she starts to remember when her occipital implant was being installed. And she didn't start to remember.
She always remembered. She just did not tell him that it was painful.
Tell him. Right. But she says that was the most painful thing she had ever experienced. And then once she was Borg, she did it to others. And she, in her way of connecting with his story, she says, you know what? You're not the same person anymore. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't want to debate it with her. He puts his hands back on the force field again.
He does the thing again.
I want to go back to my cell.
But why would he do that again there? I don't understand. Is it because he feels like he deserves the pain because of all the bad things he's done?
I think he's punishing himself.
It's self-punishment.
Okay. And she says, "You're free to remain here in sick bay." And he goes, he's still sick?
Yeah.
No. And he says, "Well, I don't want any special treatment."
Yeah.
So he's really, they're trying to offer him some compassion and a break, and he doesn't want it.
He doesn't want any of it. Yep. Yep. Another exterior spaceship shot right here. Yeah. Third one. Here we go. And now back to Cargo Bay One, the EB or enhanced brig,
the enhanced brig in Cargo Bay One, another cool crane shot, from above the thing. Iko is doing pull-ups again.
Yeah.
And then keep in shape. He drops down and notices that Egrid has an empty dish. He's kind of like trying to wipe the crumbs out of his empty bowl.
Yeah.
Iko notices this. And when Neelix offers Iko dinner, he refuses it. And he says, no.
Give it to him.
Give it to Egrid.
Mm-hmm.
And a nice little scene. But you do see Jolik notice this.
Yeah, Jolik's like, what is going on here?
Yeah, he seems a bit confused.
He's confused because he doesn't know what the angle is. Because he's like, wait, is there something? Is this going to lead to something else? He doesn't know what's happening at all.
We go to, I think, the ready room next.
Captain's ready room, yes.
Yeah.
Go Seven. To
the ready room. Yeah. Seven is called in there. I did make a note. We start outside on the camera's on the bridge outside of the ready room. The door opens and then Seven comes into the shot, goes into the room. And as the camera pushes in, the door shuts.
Closes. What does that remind you of?
I don't know, but it was cool. Cool shot.
Robbie.
What?
Really? Okay. Okay. So. In The Godfather, Marlon Brando is in the room with Robert Duvall, and they're waiting for Michael Corleone, the son, to come in to basically accept his position in the family. The door is open. Michael Corleone walks in, and the door is closed. And Corleone's wife is what? Oh, my God. It was the same. It was almost set up exactly.
Same shot.
And I was like, because it's very effective. It's a very effective shot. So,
yeah. It was a very cool shot. I love the way that scene opened. Seven goes in, though. She says, "You wanted to see me." Janeway says, "Yes, we've received a response from the Nigerians. The family has refused to consider an appeal."
Yeah. Yeah.
And
they won't even look at the scientific information. They don't even care.
They won't even look at it.
Nope.
Yedek says the family found the request insulting.
Yeah. They were offended by that. Mm-hmm.
And Seven's now defending him. Seven goes, "Your government should insist that they review this." And Yedek says, "We have laws protecting victims from emotional distress." Mm-hmm. Seven gets very frustrated. Basically, she gets really frustrated. Captain says, "You know what? That's enough. I want to speak to her privately." Yeah. Kicks Yedek out.
Yeah, Seven even suggests to Janeway that we offer asylum to Iko on the ship.
Mm-hmm. And Seven says, "It's like the opportunity that you gave me."
And then Janeway sort of, calls Seven out. She says, "I think this is more about you, not Seven, than Iko." Yeah. "You still feel responsible for all the violent acts that you had to do as a Borg." So essentially, Janeway's saying to Seven that if Iko is cleared of these crimes, or if the family sort of pardons him, that somehow you will feel pardoned for all the bad things that you did as a Borg in a way. So Janeway's sort of saying this is
that you're feeling guilty, that this is, you're getting personally involved here.
Yeah.
And just as they're getting into this conversation, bam, there's a big attack, sparks. Yeah. They run onto the bridge.
Yeah.
I think Chakotay says an alien vessel just dropped out of warp and opened fire.
That's right.
Yep. Go out to space. Again, that ship looks a lot like the Delta Flyer. They stole my designs.
But this is nothing. Okay, fine. This is another ship that isn't the same ship as the first one that kind of had issues with radiation. But yet, yes, they copied your design again.
A little bit. There's just some influence there, which I would like my trademark copyrighted on that.
Well, we kind of jump back and forth between the bridge and the enhanced brig. As the attack happens, you see fritzing going on in the brig area, like the force fields are kind of going in and out. We jump back to the bridge. Kim has a line. By the way, I think we only see Harry on the bridge in this entire episode. That's it.
True.
Yeah. Yes. And Harry says, "We've lost power on decks 8 through 10. Janeway's like,
"Oh,
The cargo bay is. Dun, dun, dun. Tuvok. Well, she didn't even say anything. Tuvok just walks out. They don't even need to speak. Yeah, they have ESP. Yeah. So he leaves to contain those prisoners. And we are down in cargo bay one, where force fields do fritz out entirely. A couple of prisoners get zapped by the guards, but then the rest sort of overpower the rest of the security detail that's there. Mm-hmm. And they get knocked out and the prisoners escape. Mm-hmm. Now we're on the bridge. And
the prisoners except Iko.
Iko doesn't do anything. Iko stays in his
in his cell.
I'm not going to do anything.
They say in this scene, let's go storm the bridge. So
doesn't
look good. No. We go out to space. The little ship is still
firing. Yeah, and that little ship had a lot of firepower for a tiny ship against us.
It was a surprise attack. That's what I figured.
Yes, but we discover that ship is trying to beam off all the Benkaran prisoners off of Voyager. No one else, just the Benkaran, not the Nigeans, just the Benkarans. Mm-hmm. And we also learned that someone is trying to get into the shuttle bay. And we do jump to a scene in the corridor where we find out it's Jolig. Jolig is there. He's like phasering along with another prisoner trying to knock down that door. But at that point, it's Yedek and company that sort of show up and shoot one of the prisoners.
Well, I think Tuvok shoots one of the prisoners and then he goes to see him. And that's when Yedek like nods to his guy, like, let's go. It seemed a little sketchy. Like Yedek was kind of.
Was that right?
Rogue.
Because Yedek is taken hostage by Jolig in this scene in the corridor.
In
a minute.
But this point, the first Tuvok shoots down. But Tuvok does say that ship is trying to transport the prisoners off.
Right.
Go back to the bridge. Harry says they're trying to lock on to all five Benkaran life signs. So they're trying to get these prisoners, the Benkarans.
That's what I said earlier. So either my notes are off or your notes are off in the timeline, because I thought that was before the corridors, but maybe not.
It jumps around a lot.
There's a couple of shots in the corridor is what it is. The final shot in the corridor is Jolig trying to get into the shuttle bay because it shows them shooting it at, right? And that's when Yedek knocks out one guy, but Yedek is taken hostage by Jolig, and then they abscond somewhere with they go back to the enhanced brig.
They go back, and Jolik says, you've got 5 minutes to get us a shuttle. Tuvok says, Tuvok to bridge, lock on to Yedek's signature, beam him to, before he can even finish beaming anyone anywhere, Janeway says, transporters are offline. We need 10 minutes to get them up and running.
Right. And can't do anything.
We go to the brig. They throw Yedek on the floor.
They also seal the doors.
Seal the door.
Right.
In the enhanced brig or cargo bay one. Yedek says, you guys are not getting off the ship. And then Jolig says, well, then I suppose I should kill you right now.
Right now. Yep. And you hear him power up his little phaser.
And then Iko says, wait, don't. He's mine.
Yeah.
You saw how they beat me. So he says he wants to be the one to kill. Yedek. And so Jolik gives him the phaser, and then Yedek thinks, I knew it. You were a bad guy.
Right.
You haven't changed. And Jolik laughs. Iko
Wasn't Jolik that laughed. Oh, no, you're right. Sorry. Jolik did laugh. Sorry. It was Jolik.
Jolik laughs about this.
Off camera. He's like,
off camera.
Yeah.
And then Iko turns the phaser and hands it to Yedek.
He does it in one smooth move, which was super cool. He's pointing it at Yedek, and he just goes, kind of like how, like, you know, rock and roller drummers kind of just spin that little, you know, drumstick. Yeah. He just spun that phaser in his hand. So then, of course, Yedek grabs it and then takes out both Jolig and the other bad guy, the other prisoner that's there.
Mm. We've got a space shot. So Iko has changed.
Yeah.
This is the lesson here. We have a space shot, Captain's Log Supplemental. Mm-hmm. Warden Yedek has used his influence to convince the Nigean family to hear Iko's appeal for leniency. So we think we're headed towards a happy ending here.
We do. And we see the appeal. And I'm going to say, as far as close-ups are concerned, usually those close-ups are reserved for the series regulars. But in here, it was... it was an Iko close up for the appeal. I was like, wow, that's ECU right there. Very, very close.
He says, I'm a different person. I'm a better person. And this crew has helped me to see that. Mm-hmm. Then he turns and has a long lingering look with Seven.
Seven, yeah. Yep. And, the only person that's ever been nice to him, basically.
And he turns back to the family. If my death helps you find peace, I can accept that. Yep. But if you let me live, I'll never hurt anyone again, whatever you decide.
Right.
I just want you to know how sorry I am for what I took from you.
Yeah.
A really heartfelt and sincere apology or statement. Really well done.
Yeah.
And then we go back to the enhanced brig. Jolig's in there and Neelix walks in. And Jolig says, are we playing Catascot later?
Yeah.
Neelix is pissed off.
No, he's like, you know, you used me. You used me. And Jolig tries to say that, no. You know, I didn't know my brother was going to come and try to save me, you know, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So
yeah,
there we go. All right. So then we astrometrics, Seven and Iko. Seven is showing Iko all the little constellations that Iko had mentioned when he was a kid. So he's looking at those up on the big astrometric screen.
It's a beautiful shot, by the way. He walks next to the screen and he's just filled with the stars all around him.
So good.
Seven even says, you know, if you'd like, I can ask Captain Janeway to consider letting you stay here.
Yeah.
And Iko says, well, I'm not a scientist.
Yeah.
And, I won't be any help to anyone. And Seven says, well, there are other ways to be useful. I'm sure we can think of something.
Mm-hmm.
Iko says, I'd really like that. And then Janeway arrives and basically says, unfortunately, the family has not changed their mind.
In between those two scenes in Astrometrics, we do have the exterior space shot of Voyager at warp, which typically we don't see it at warp, but it was at warp. And yes, the news.
Bad news. He's not going to, they're not going to let him off. He's going to go back to be executed. Yeah. Sad, tragic ending. And as he's leaving, he turns to Seven. He says, you were the first person who wasn't afraid to look me in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I want to remember you.
Yeah.
And it's very sweet.
Yeah.
And Seven is very moved there. And then, there's a time cut later in Astrometrics. Seven, Janeway comes back in. Seven tells Janeway that it's not fair that Iko was executed for killing one person.
I wrote this down. She said, Iko was executed for taking a single life. As a drone, I took thousands, but I was never punished. Janeway responds with, you lost 20 years of your life to the Borg. I'd say that's punishment enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the end of that ep.
And she puts her hand on Seven's shoulders. It was a nice, tender moment.
It was.
Very nice.
Because duplicated Iko's hand on Seven's shoulder as well. He did that too before he left. So
everybody likes to put their hand on Seven's shoulder.
Evidently. But you know, I mean, you want a happy ending as much as possible, but basically sometimes there isn't always a happy ending.
No.
And maybe that is sort of the lesson of this episode. You know, in
a
way.
Is that your lesson? Is that your
theme? Well, I mean, what I wanted to say was that life isn't always fair. That you know, you may do all the things that are right or to set yourself up for success or whatever it may be, and you still may be spinning your wheels, you know what I'm saying? And somebody else gets the promotion, someone else gets that, and here you are thinking this is not fair, but this is part of how life is. That's so I guess maybe that is my lesson. Life isn't always fair. Yeah.
It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours. Like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more. Made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Do you have a separate lesson?
I do. My theme for this episode was kind of about their justice system and the idea of forgiveness. That for Seven, she's got to learn to forgive herself for the things she feels guilty about. That's the only way she's going to find peace. Otherwise, she's going to be tormented and haunted. And, you know, even the family that wouldn't let Iko, you know, wouldn't be open to maybe Iko is not the same person. They're not going to find peace getting revenge on him and having him executed. It's not going to bring back their loved one. It's not going to. So forgiveness is the theme for me, that forgiveness is the only way to peace. That's
like
my
theme. Okay. Yeah. That's a good one.
Ratings time.
You give yours first. I'll give mine after yours.
I gotta say, there's a lot of things I think that are good about this episode, but ultimately it didn't grab me.
Oh no.
It did not grab me. It was well directed. Our guest stars were good actors, good ideas in the script, but ultimately I was meh. I think because we didn't have enough of our regular cast. I mean, like you said, you were only on the bridge for a couple of scenes and Chakotay didn't have much to do. I don't know.
Chakotay had nothing to do practically in this one.
Didn't grab me this episode. Okay.
All right. So what's your lower rating?
5.2.
Dang.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go that low.
I'm sticking with it. 5.2.
I'm not. I'm going to give it higher. I'm going to go 7.1.
What?
I'll tell you why, because this is an important issue. It is
an important
capital
issue.
Punishment is huge deal, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm just going off of the message, you know, the message and the subject matter. It gives me a 7.1.
I get it.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's hear what the average is.
Our captain and admiral's average rating for repentance, 6.8.
Which is
closer
to mine than yours. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. 6.8. Okay.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think some people really like this. Others might be like me, kind of meh.
Yeah. I liked it more than you. Yeah, basically. I really did. And okay. I think Jeff did a great job as Iko. So
yeah, he did. He did. And the direction was good. A lot of good things to say about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. There you go. What's next week?
Prophecy. Join us next week, everyone, for Prophecy, when Robbie and I will recap and discuss that episode.
Wait a minute. I think I remember some of this.
Maybe. Well, let's not talk about that now. Let's talk about that next week.
I'm excited to. Let's. I can't wait for next week.
Yeah. All right. For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.